history through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, brought to you by Paul Everett's RV Country, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are men and women around you with pretty incredible stories to tell. And we're never going to know unless we take the time to ask a few of the right questions and listen. The idea is to honor our veterans for their service and the sacrifices they've made, to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And along the way, we sure do learn a lot. We're educated, we're entertained, often inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. And I was about to introduce you to a 99-year-old veteran in Las Vegas, but I'm going to save that until next week because this is Mother's Day weekend and the perfect opportunity to celebrate the women who have served in our armed forces. During World War II, more than 350,000 women were in uniform, and that doesn't even take into account the thousands more in defense-related jobs. All those Rosie the Riveter whose crucial contributions freed up men for positions closer to the front lines. Over the years on Hometown Heroes, I've had the privilege of meeting women all over this country who volunteered to serve at a time when the need was great. Nurses, pilots, air traffic controllers, Bond girls, and I don't mean James Bond. There were so many ways that women served in World War II, and I thought it would only be fitting on Mother's Day weekend to share a few highlights from some of those conversations with these lovely ladies who, before they became mothers, answered Uncle Sam's call. Before we're done today, we'll hear from nurses and WAVES and WASPs. If you were alive then, you remember those acronyms. But we're going to start with one of the very few, the very proud women Marines of World War II. June Moran was a senior in high school in San Diego when Imperial Japan attacked Pearl Harbor.
My dad let me take the car to church. My brother and I were, that's where we were. When we came home, here was the news on the radio. And my dad was glued to that radio like you can't believe, listening to everything. Just devastating, and it was unbelievable that this would happen to us. Such a disaster, my goodness. And of course, no TV then. I mean, you didn't see any pictures until in the newspaper a couple of days later, but on the radio it was constant all day long.
And with your father having been a Navy veteran, and now most of our Navy has been destroyed, that must have been really hard for him.
Very hard. He kept saying something's going to happen. He would get news from the Naval News, you know, retired person. Boy, as soon as that happened, he said, well, I'm going back in the service. And my mother says, you're too old. They won't take you. He says, oh, yes, they will. They want every man they can get. He went in 6 months from that. He was in, like, back in again. And so they gave him the rifle range at Camp Matthews there in San Diego. And that's what he had during the war.
Wow. I imagine that made an impression on you as a young lady that this was important enough to your father that even at his age he would find something to do?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, he's military through and through, Navy for sure. And it's a Navy town. San Diego was just inundated with Army, Navy, Marines, and so forth. So it was around you all the time, plus the aircraft industry brought a lot of people from the Midwest out there to work, and that's when the women started working, Rosie the Riveter, etc. I worked down at Broadway Pier, and I saw so many troop ships being loaded with Army and Marines, and it was just a tremendous amount of men that they could get aboard one of these ships. Then they had a USO in downtown San Diego. You used to stop there and see the fellows and, you know, dance with them, and so you got to know them pretty, but they were pretty nice guys that were in the Marine Corps, and that kind of influenced me, I think. And I think my dad was a little disappointed that I didn't go in the Navy, and so he asked why, and I said, well, I didn't like the uniform. It was too sloppy. No, he couldn't argue with that. He said, okay, but I think he was a little crushed, but.
So if I read between the lines, it sounds like the guys that came down from Camp Pendleton just looked really good and you were hoping to meet one of them?
Oh, I met quite a few.
How How did your mother feel about you joining the Marines?
Not happy, not happy. But she was very happy that her sons were not the same age as her daughter, so they would have been gone. And they all did serve later in the services, but they were too young to go to war. Very happy about that.
Well, I'm sure they had to sign up after their big sister was a Marine. They had to try to live up to that example. So what was it like getting welcomed to the Marine Corps? Was boot camp difficult?
Boot camp was something else. Yeah, it was very difficult. You didn't even know your own name the first week. Somebody's yelling at you all the time, you know, do this, do that, blah, 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 blah. And as long as you do what they say or jump as high as they want you to jump, you're okay.
And are these women who are training you or men?
We had men DIs, the drill instructors. But other than that, it was women. And we had one gal scared the heck out of us. I think she looked like she was 7 feet tall. She was from Texas, and she had, believe it or not, she had a swagger stick. I mean, she was in control, and you were just a lowlife down here. And she let you know it every day, tells you. And don't think the Marine Corps will do the thinking for you. Okay. So as long as you went along with it, didn't let it get to you, you're okay.
Did you have an idea of what kind of duties you were hoping to receive as a woman Marine?
Well, I knew I wasn't going to be going overseas, that's for sure. So what their motto for the women, WRs, were this, to free a man to fight. And so we replaced a lot of the fellows in different occupations. I ended up in the personnel office, which was in the general's building, which was quite a ways away. We hoofed it every day. There we had a motor pool. Some gals were really mechanics. Anything that they could release the man to go and do, well, they replaced them. And that was the idea. The fellow that I replaced was so happy to see me. He said, "Sweetheart, am I glad to see you?" And he grabs me and twirls me around in the office where I'm supposed to be and then punks me down, grabbed his hat. He was out the door. He was so happy to be relieved to go out and get killed. But they just could hardly stand not to be in the action, the fellas. They really, really wanted to do it. And we had a sergeant major, an old salt, that had at least probably 30 years in. But he was pretty nice about it. There were a lot that didn't feel the women should be in at all. I mean, what are you doing to my Marine Corps letting women in here? But he was pretty neat with it. And the guys were really happy to see us come in and take over their job so they could get the heck out of there. It was quite an experience, and I'm glad that I did it.
You know, the Marine Corps has a saying, and it's part of the recruitment strategy for the Marine Corps. They say, the few, the proud, the Marines. I guess it's the fewer, the prouder, the female Marines of World War II, because that's a much smaller number. What are you most proud of with your service in World War II?
I think that I made it, that I completed it.
Have you ever gotten any funny reactions when you tell people, yeah, I was a Marine in World War II?
They don't believe it, really. Huh? Well, they really weren't aware so much of women Marines as they were the WACs or the WAVES, because they had bigger numbers, and they also went overseas, and there were a lot of nurses in the WACs, of course. And I think they were more known than we were.
What do you think people today should remember about World War II and what millions and millions of Americans, not just men, did back then?
I don't know. You would think that that would have been, as they say, the war to end all wars, but we know that it's not true. But it's astounding how many people were killed in that war. It's just unbelievable to me now that when you hear of the numbers, and I have been over to Normandy to see the beaches and the bunkers that are still there. And when that beach over there is tremendous. I mean, it's huge. And to think of all those men on that beach and all that were slaughtered, you might say, because they were. Especially if you saw the movie D-Day. That's the way it was, but it was just tremendous, and I hope never again.
In addition to Normandy, June has been to the National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C., with Central Valley Honor Flight out of California. The next voice we're going to hear from is that of Irma Justice Smith. I met her at the World War II Memorial in 2011 when she was visiting with Honor Flight South Carolina. Irma was a school teacher who had graduated from the University of South Carolina and eventually became one of the founders of Columbia Christian School there. You'll hear how she looked at her time as one of World War II's Navy waves, women accepted for volunteer emergency service, as a life-changing experience. But the first thing out of her mouth at that memorial was a reaction to this expansive monument itself.
Awesome. I cannot believe it. Most fantastic thing I've ever seen in my life.
When you heard that there was such a thing as an honor flight and you could come out here and not have to pay for it, how exciting was that?
Very exciting. I applied for it right away.
Now tell me how you got into the service. I understand you were in the waves during World War II.
Yes, I was. I grew up in a small town, Pahokee, Florida. I knew that I would never get out of Pahokee unless I joined the service, so that's why I joined the service.
And you saw one of those waves posters and said, I want to do that?
That's right. And I did. When I became 21.
What kinds of things did they have you do?
I worked in the Office of Bureau of Naval Personnel, identification work, identifying all the Navy people with fingerprints. But I worked mostly in the office, so.
And I'm sure there were some guys in their bell bottoms around, right?
In fact, I married one of them.
So Uncle Sam was good to you, gave you a husband.
He sure was. Well, my husband, he had gone to OCS, had gotten his commission. I came into the office, and I saw him. He said to see the older people who had been in that department since World War I. But it wasn't really that. There were a lot of pretty ways there. And so his ship would come into New York. He would come down every weekend, and that's how we just fell in love.
You ever think about how your life would have been different if you hadn't decided to join the Navy?
Yes, I do. I would still be down in that little country town of Pahokee, Florida, picking beans.
What did it mean to you when you heard that the war was over?
Listen, I was in New York City in a taxi cab waiting to go to a train station to come back to Washington. When we heard the war was over, everything broke out in New York City. It was wonderful.
That's not you in that famous picture, is it?
No.
Kissing the Navy man?
No. No. But it was an exciting time, though, to see that the war was really over.
When you think about kids and grandkids and future generations of America, what do you think it's important for them to know and remember about World War II and what men and women did then?
I think that we should tell them about it, show them pictures, keep telling them about their grandparents and their loved ones who served in the service, and not to let them be forgotten, ever be forgotten.
Well, Irma Justice Smith will never be forgotten. She passed away last August at the age of 93. This will be her daughter Vivian's first Mother's Day without her. And I know we could all hear her smile through the radio, but you can find a World War II era photo of Irma's smile, along with all the other women you're going to hear from today, at hometownheroesradio.com. It's time for our first break, but when this special Mother's Day weekend edition of Hometown Heroes continues, we'll meet more moms who found ways to support our country during World War II. From flying planes to taking care of wounded warriors, their contributions were a giant part of America's war effort. Hometown Heroes will be right back after this. If you'd like to sell your low-mileage, well-maintained RV in excellent condition, bring it to Paul Everett's RV Country and they'll sell it for you. That's right. Consignments are welcome. Any type of motorhome, travel trailer, or fifth wheel. With 8 locations in 5 states, there's probably a Paul Everett's within driving distance of this radio station. Helping RVers get the most out of their RVs is another one of those things that make doing business with Paul such a unique pleasure. Paul Everett's RV Country in Fresno and Indio, California, Bullhead City, Arizona, Laughlin, Nevada, Coburg, Oregon, and 3 locations in Washington, Fife, Milton, and Mount Vernon. For the exact locations, go to the website. That address is rvcountry.com. That's rvcountry.com. Over 55 years of experience and 1 million RVers served. Paul Everett's RV Country, proud supporters of Hometown Heroes.